Hello, my name is Jamie Taylor and this is Juice Podcast, and with me is
Emily Harmon. So this week we are talking about, Jamie,
orange wine,
also known as amber wine, skin contact wine, skin fermented wine, skin ferment, skin contact, all the things.
So a little bit about skin contact wine. Okay, so I think the traditional fermenting process with wine is you extract the skin, the seed, all of that stuff goes, right?
With white wine, yeah. Usually you remove it, exactly. So you separate the skins. You press the grapes.
So an orange wine, just to clarify this, an orange wine is essentially white. It's white grape.
Yeah, you've been doing some research.
Literally, like 15 minutes on the train on the way up here.
Okay, yeah, invested in it. Yeah, so
busy man.
So basically, white grapes, kind of like white wine, but a bit different. So you already notice from the colour, like the
amber wine.
Yeah, also known as amber wine. You notice it's got a darker colour. And I think, usually when we make white wine, we separate the skins and the juice. So we press the grapes immediately, and then you've got the sweet grape juice that you ferment.
Okay. Why would you separate it? Is that just like what everybody's always done, that's why you do it?
No, it's not always been done that way. So for example, one of the wines we've got today, which is the second wine we're going to try, is from Georgia, where there's been an uninterrupted history of producing orange wine.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the oldest country for producing wine. So thousands of years they've been making Georgia. Orange wine. Yeah. It's the origin of wine. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
So far with the evidence that
there was a question that I'll ask you, maybe a little bit later.
Okay, all right.
But it will come.
So all wait with bated breath for that question.
If you're thinking about going to make some beans on toast, forget it.
Because there's
a question coming, it's going to be great.
Anyway, it's not that the white wine as we know it is, the white wine as we know it's a relatively modern thing, I guess.
How modern?
I don't know for sure. It's not clear for sure when the first white wines, when people started separating the skins and the juice. What's very interesting for me is like when you look back at history, like if you look at like bread making, for example. So a friend of mine, she's an archaeologist and she has been studying bread in Pompeii and studying like, you know, these like fossilized breads and bread culture. And actually you think, oh, back in ancient times, things were more primitive. It's like, no, people still cared about flavour. They still cared about things being well made. They were exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think actually, like, you know, it's quite basic to make wine in some ways. To make really great wine, it's not so basic. There's things you have to do well. Wine is something that for a lot of people, they've just recently discovered. It's something I discovered quite early on into my wine career, even before I worked as a wine professional. One of the first wines ever tried, which...
Wait, you're a wine professional?
You're taking the piss out of me now.
Sorry. Please, continue.
Yeah. But I tried a wine which is from this region of the wine that we've got now. So for everybody tuning in, we're drinking Ziderich Witowska 2020, which is from Friuli. Anybody who's into wines and orange wines knows that Ziderich is kind of a benchmark producer, and that this wine is like kind of an iconic wine. From this region, I started drinking a wine called Gravna Rebola Jowla, and I think the first time I tried that was like, I don't know, 2008 or something. That wasn't the vintage, that's when I was working, so I think it was like 02 or something like that I tried. I was like, wow, this is really different to anything I've tried before. And nobody explained to me what orange wine was, so it was just like, this is a different wine,
and
I don't know why.
So when did you find out about orange wine?
Yeah, 2008 or 7. 7 or 8, can't remember exactly what year. But I didn't know.
Because you really took an interest in wine?
I was working at the River Cafe as a waitress, and Stacey Lee Edwards, who was the head sommelier, knew I was really into wine. I was coming for dinner and she's like, you should try this wine.
But is it niche then? Was it like...
It wasn't even called orange wine on the list, it was in the white wine. She said, try this wine, it's like something you would never have tried before. And I tried it and I was like, wow, what is this?
And where was that wine from?
From this region, Friuli, in the northeast of Italy, on the border of Slovenia.
So is that arguably the mother of orange wines?
Well, no, because I think the mother's like from all of these producers in Georgia and stuff.
So Georgia.
And Josko Gravna, who is the founder of the winery Gravna, like he went to Georgia and that inspired a lot of what he's doing. So he has like these clay pots called Quevri in Georgia. They're called amphora in like most of Europe, other than Spain, called Tinajas. He imported these clay pots from Georgia, and so he makes his wine in these amphoras or these Quevris from Georgia.
So you say clay, what do you mean? Like,
so the vessel's made out of clay, okay. So it's like a piece of pottery.
So what do we get nowadays? It's stainless.
Stainless steel, okay. Oak barrels, concrete, ceramic, also the amphora, the clay. And then like also you hear of people like fermenting wines in like rock, basically.
That's my kind of wine. Let's do a rock wine podcast.
Yeah, we should do obscure
cave
vessels.
Wine.
Yeah. All of a sudden, Jamie became the voiceover of a trailer. Cave wine. Coming
this
out
year.
December 15th.
Yeah. It's cave wine. Anyway, stay tuned for cave wine because it's going to be great.
But yeah, anyway, so that's orange wine. So basically, skin contact. So you leave the skins in contact with the juice. And for anybody who's like, doesn't know anything about orange wine, I
which
think
is me.
Yeah. In the case of orange wine and red wine, I think of the skins of the grape being a little bit like tea leaves.
Okay.
Stay with me. So usually when we make white wine,
it's
we press...
stronger. Like it will... Sorry, should I
go
comment
ahead.
On this?
Yeah.
So if you leave the tea leaves in, it's going to be a stronger brew.
So that's a good question. Exactly. So when you... It's not just a case of leaving them in longer.
Okay.
So... if we think of white wine, press the grapes immediately, then we ferment this juice that has no skin contact, no skins in there. Then we make orange wine, we keep the skins with the juice. And the skins with the juice add more colour because basically it's like macerating. So it extracts more colour and then it takes on this orange colour. And well done, gold star.
I am learning.
Yeah, and then you get different flavours. So I think about when you make a cup of tea with tea leaves, depending on how hot the water is, how long you leave the tea leaves in, and maybe how much you like stir them around and do stuff with.
Never stir it.
And then, maybe you do, if you want a really strong like thing. And then, also depending on what the tea leaves are, because some tea leaves are more tannic, they have different flavours.
Yeah,
so all these factors come into making a different style of orange wine. So that's like the simplest way I describe it, the process of making
it's like
it.
Brewing process.
Yeah, macerating.
Macerating.
Or infusing.
Infusing.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me just write this down.
We've got like three orange wines to try today, so I'd be interested to see. And I think sometimes people think all orange wines taste the same, and I'm hoping that you'll see from like the three wines that I picked today that actually orange wines can be quite different from one another.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know nothing about wine, and there are three different wines here, and I'm hoping that I don't know that little about wines that I won't be able to distinguish between the three.
But you will be able to, I mean. You want to be able to, like, tell the differences.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at the Ziderich Ratowska that we've got in the glass, it's not super dark compared to some orange wines. Like, it looks like a darker white wine, but it's it's a bit cloudy as well, right?
Yeah. I think that was my,
unfiltered.
Like, note, is that it's not clear. Or is that
exactly. So it's an unfiltered wine because they're like a lot of actually with all these wineries, they're not they're low.
It's bloody obvious when you say it.
No, but I think it's not when you're like a newbie. Like some people look at cloudy wine and they're like, "There's something wrong with it." It's like there's nothing wrong with it.
So I went to one of your events quite a long time ago, and it was the first bottle I think we bought. I don't know what it was, but it had the sediment in the bottle of the wine. I was just like, God, Emily, this is not going well.
Because you thought these were just like really bad bottles.
This is just old shit wine.
Did you think that?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
No, but it was. I think for someone that knows nothing, like it's not a concern, but it's like, why is there that? Why is there this? You know, like, so it's good to have an understanding of it, I think.
Yeah, and the whole process of, like, filtering and finding wine is, like, relatively new in the last, like, 100 years or so, right? And I think, and that goes hand in hand with industrialization of agriculture, because viticulture, the farming of grapes, was not void of that. Like, it's just,
So to continue on that tangent, what is the most common vessel to, is it ferment wine?
Stainless steel would be the most common vessel because all of the big wineries would use that.
Okay.
Big stainless steel tanks.
And
then following that would be oak.
But surely that adds a flavour and a age to it.
The oak.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, it does add flavour. And it aerates the wine, and it, like, the wine develops differently because...
So is oak, is natural material better? Or, yeah, it's controversial.
I don't know if it's controversial, but I would say it's not binary.
So it's your character almost. Like, you can say, this is our wine, and it's aged in...
Standards. I mean, the thing is, depending on the oak that you use, if you use brand new oak barrels, they're going to have a big impact on flavour. Yeah,
saying if you were, like, do you use, like, brandy or cask oaks, like, cask barrels that are...
Often white... No, so you wouldn't use, like, a brandy oak for, like, a wine in general. It might work the other way, so, like, people who produce sherry sell their barrels to whiskey houses.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
But I think... There are barrels that do influence flavour, and some people want to influence flavour by oak.
Yeah.
What we're talking about today with this topic and these kind of wines, the three producers that we've got... No, why are you apologising?
Because I've really come off on the tangent. We're talking about... No, but
I think it's really interesting. And this podcast is always about tangents as well. The wines that I've selected today, they are from artisan producers. They're handcrafted wines. All of these wines, if they were using any oak at any point in the production, it's not to impact flavour. It's as an, it would be old oak, it'd be large oak, and it'd be as a vessel, because the vessel itself benefits the wine, whereas there are a number of producers that would use oak to impact flavour.
Okay.
They don't want this. Okay. These are producers that care about expressing the varietal, that care about expressing the soil, and care about expressing the vintage, and in some ways themselves, right? Like, I don't...
Well, absolutely. I mean, my understanding of, like, casking is, like, whiskies. You have X cask, and that influences...
The flavour. The
flavour of the whiskey, yeah. Okay. So that's not a thing with what we're drinking. Okay, cool.
Not today, but it could be.
Okay.
It, with other wines,
Oh, God, it's confusing, isn't it?
It is confusing. Diderich founded in the late 80s in Friuli, in Cast, which is the Carso region. It's family-run winery, and they're very, very small production in general. Apparently only producing about 20,000 bottles a year, so, like, microscopic, actually, or near to.
How
and
20,000?
20,000, it's really small.
Okay.
So winemaking, hand-picked grapes, everything's de-stemmed. They're fermented in open vats with wild yeast, and then aged in medium and large size Slavonian oak barrels, and there's no filtration, which we already know from looking at the wine. So this is old, used oak barrels, so that the wine breathes and has texture, but not to give flavour to it. Because obviously I'm nerdy, and I've been into orange wine. I love natural wines. I love, you know, this kind of artisan style of wine. I think sometimes I'm in my own little bubble of, like, well, this is just how good wine is, right? I'm interested as somebody who lives in Surrey.
Doesn't know anything about wine.
Knows, is interested, but, like, you know, like, how, like, when you drink this, like, what do you think? Are you like, this is delicious, this is weird, this is disgusting, like, how do you perceive it? Like, how's it different to white wine for you?
It's really difficult for me at this stage to comment. It's difficult because...
Do you notice the tannins, like this dry feeling you get with it?
Yeah, there is that crossover between red and white, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, this one for me feels more like a white wine. I'd be interested as we work through them, but it's got a white winey kind of texture to it. It's got, like, almost like a creaminess to it.
But it's heavier, like, it's not like...
More structure, exactly.
It's not like white, you know? Is that right?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking at you thinking you're going to... You'll either say yes or no.
I know, I think you are right. It is got more structure. I'm just opening the next wine so we can move on to it.
Okay, so this is my favourite bottle. Is there anywhere to pour this, or do we just have to drink it?
I think you've got to finish it, yeah. I mean, you've got about 10 mils in your glass.
All right, fucking hell.
Don't pour so much in your glass next time.
Okay, so this is...
So, look, now we're on a...
Mate, we are on a totally
different
queue.
Yeah, no, I wonder if we should have done this at the end, but we'll see. So we have Pheasant's Tears Kisi.
Look at that.
2022.
Now that lives up to the name.
Yeah, it's very orange. Yeah. A bit different, like, on the nose, how it smells.
I like that.
It's from Tibani in Kaheti. So this is a region just actually not too far from Tbilisi, the capital. I've been there a few times. I've actually visited Pheasant's Tears and John Werdemann is a wonderful man who has also been an extraordinary ambassador for Georgian wine. He's also been on the podcast in the past as well, which was great. This grape variety is really known for having this note of like dried apricots, lots of citrus, kind of a little bit floral as well.
And so for those of you that don't know, Emily is English and she went to Australia for like a month. And
then 5 years! 5 years!
Put your bloody phone down! As soon as you're angry, it's for the Australian Emily. So
apparently this wine has around 3 weeks of skin contact and they keep some whole bunches in there as well.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
So it means that they don't separate. So the wine we had before, they take the stems away. So when you keep the stems in...
But when you say stems...
You know, what the grape's attached to.
No, I get that. But okay. Is it stems... Does that mean everything? Like stems, seed...
Well, the seed's already in the grape. Like the grapes... When you're doing skin contact wine, you can't remove the seeds because they're in the centre of the grape. But the stems, you can, because there's like something called a de-stalker where you can de-stalk it and take it out. And you want, if you're using stems or stalks, or whole bunches, we also call it, you want to make sure that like you've got the right ripeness, because if you pick too early, they can be very green, it can add a lot of bitterness, it can give unpleasant flavours to the wine as well. And it does give a level of tannin too. So like there's, you have to be considerate around using whole bunches or using the stems or the stalks in the wine that you're producing. So they have chosen to use 20% skin contacts for about 3 weeks, and this is all made in clay. So we've gone from Slavonian oak to now to Georgian Quevery, which is the big clay amphora pots.
And how big are these pots?
Depends on the size. Like, I mean, some of them are bigger than me, and some of them are smaller than me. I find that it's got a lot of like this sort of peachy, apricot-y kind of notes in this wine.
Okay.
Why are you frowning at me like that?
Because I tried to explain it before you did, because if anyone listens to this and I say what I really think, they're
say what
go,
you really think.
No, but now I can't.
You have to.
No, because my vision is is bullshit. It's annulled. My vision is good wine, kind of peachy. I think that was my favourite wine
out of the two.
Yeah, so far.
I think what I notice about this wine, what I really like, is like it's. I mean, there's way more tannin, eh? Almost, it's got
but
a chalkiness.
What is tannin? It's
that dry feeling.
Yeah, that, like,
dry,
your tongue.
Chalky,
yeah, I get it. I get
you
it.
Know?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And it just feels also, like, wider, a bit more oily. It feels richer. It just feels like a bigger,
it
more
kind
intense.
Of feels like, I'm here and this is the wine.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think, no, that's good. And I think also as somebody who has experience in construction, building your own house, and your job and everything as well, like you've done construction in the past, you've done mechanic work.
But Emily, what do I do for a living?
Yeah, tell us. Lighting.
So, no, anyway, I digress.
But if you think about structure of a building, if you think about structure of a wine, built, you know, like I... Think about how this wine is constructed. I think about the shape of it. Think about how all of the elements interact to make this final product.
I think this is where I am like fascinated to indulge in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, that I have no... other than just like curiosity, I have no real need to indulge in what we're talking about. And... Now that there is a necessity for me to get involved, I think that's part of the reason, like, why I will learn anything is because of necessity, and it's exciting.
So what you're saying now is because you're on a wine podcast, I'm obligated to actually participating in storing the information that we talk
no,
about.
No, I will probably never store this information because I have... a very limited brain, and I have friends that are very clued up in what they do.
So you just have this efficiency
really
where you're like, oh, she's got the information.
It's
so
in a nutshell, yeah. I'll just be like, I mean, like, earlier on before we were recording, Emily supplied me with a lot of wine at Christmas, and it all went down very well. And I mean, like... I'm very happy to delegate in my industry and within my friend group. So, yeah, I will delegate. I will, like, quite happily really not know. Again, very orange. That's the most orange.
Yeah, so we've just bought the next wine, which is Ageno from La Stoppa, 2018.
Look at that.
Yeah. So this is 100% Malvasia Candia, which
it's
is the 100%
Tango.
Yeah, so it's an aromatic type of Malvasia. yeah, so obviously fermented on skins and, yeah, also unfiltered like the other wines. She's pretty iconic, the winemaker here, so it's great to include the wine on the podcast, I think, because she's kind of a reference producer, particularly for orange wine as well. Yeah, so it's a wine estate in Val Trebbiola, not far from the river Trebbia, so near to Piacenza. Elena, the winemaker, she farms all the vines biodynamically and has a couple of decades behind her. The family purchased the land in the 1970s. Lots of old vines, and obviously, as I said, biodynamic farming and really low-fi winemaking. So she's, you know, not filtering, not fining. She's using wild yeast for fermentation. So you get this sort of very pure expression, I think. I think she'd be considered kind of one of the, like, top natural producers in the area as well. Yeah, let's have a smell. I haven't even picked up the glass. I poured it for Jamie. but yeah, it's very aromatic. Like, you get a lot of that kind of like floral, a little bit tropical fruit as well. Like, it smells like the whole fruit belt.
And it's very orange.
Yeah. But what I really like about this is it's tropical, it's fruity, but it's also very savoury. Like, it's a bit spicy. Black tea also there. You know, like, it's really, yeah. But I think, you know, for me, I think often when people are talking to me about natural wines, their intro to them, and like, why do I like them? And also with orange wine and skin contact wine, is what I find very interesting is, particularly with skin contact wine, and especially with skin contact wines with aromatic grapes, and this is made from an aromatic grape, is that you get this almost like three-dimensional or four-dimensional experience of a wine. And what I mean by that is, you smell it and you're like, wow, this is fruity and floral and it's almost
it's
tropical, right?
Yeah, it is like a...
And then you taste it and you're like, I expected this to be fruity and sweet and all of this stuff. And then you're like, it's not, it's dry, it's like, it's savoury, it's salty, it's umami, it's like all this other stuff. So you get this like whole thing where it like feels like such a journey. And I find that really interesting because if you compare this to like a bottle that you bought in like the local corner shop, you smell it and maybe it smells of like peach and apple and lemon and it tastes of that, and that's fine, right? Like, but it's just fine. Whereas when you try this, it's like, you may not like it, but
it's almost confused.
Yeah,
it's like this is
character,
this is what you're going in for, and then you try it and you're just like, shit the bed.
Yeah, it's a lot of character. It's not necessarily an easy wine. It could be challenging for a lot of people. Also, there's, you know,
there's a sharpness to it.
There's amazing acidity, exactly. Yeah. And there's also like quite a bit of tannin there as well. That dry feeling again at the end. I mean, I love cooking Moroccan food, like a lot of like dishes from the Levant. So tagines, like things that have a lot of herbs, different spices, aromatic spices. But with a wine like this, when I was in Georgia, John, who made the second wine, the Kisi from Pheasant's Tears, the one that you really liked, he told me, it's like, you know, look at how people consume wine, how they eat food in Georgia. And how they do that is you have loads of food on the table. Very good place for vegetarian food, by the way, Jamie. But everybody's tuning in, Jamie's a vegetarian. Anyway, John, by the way, is also a vegetarian who made that second wine. Maybe you could feel that energetically. And that's why you liked it. But anyway, so, and Georgia's a great place to eat vegetarian. Anyway, but like you have, when you eat in Georgia, you get these tables that are like, full, like almost tapas style, all these different foods, all these different flavours. And what goes on the table? One bottle of wine, one bottle of orange wine, and it can handle garlic, onion, spices.
Almost refreshing. Like, it's so
nice. Unpretentious.
Yeah, it's just like, that's what we're having, and we're going with it. And I mean, like, for you and people that are listening to this, that are listening to me say that, they're like, I get that there's all these incredible growers and wineries, whatever, like, but it's just like, sometimes, just to have, I don't know, say you're having a house party, and you're going to go, right, this is what we're having tonight in terms of food, this is the wine that's going with it, and that's what you're going to go with. There's like a confidence in that that is so nice. Like, yeah. It's like almost relaxing. It's like, I love that.
I think it's very easy when you get like into the wine topic to be super nerdy about it, in turn become very pretentious about it. For me, it's like, it goes back to like our conversation around like glassware that we had before, yeah, in the episode before, where it was like, you know, actually like have one type of wine glass, but make sure it's a beautiful glass that you've got. Have one wine that like actually can be really beautiful. Like, you can simplify things. It doesn't have to be wine. Wine is overwhelming enough as a topic. Why not simplify it where you can? No?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like the, it's relatable. Like, there's, I think that, like we were saying, the glassware is relatable. I'm not saying it all comes down to glassware, but it's just like, I think if what you're eating and drinking is relatable, it's kind of nice. Like, you don't want to feel alienated, like ordering something or drinking. Well, I suppose drinking is always different, but like, you want to be involved almost.
Is the second one still your favourite?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it probably is.
It's really difficult for me to choose a favourite because I actually feel like all three of these wines have very unique meanings for me, and I feel that I appreciate them all in their own right. And I,
well, this is exactly why it must be so difficult doing a podcast like this, because you have a really, like, I'm not gonna say skewed, but like, you have an opinion on what you're talking about and what you're tasting, and you have this preconceived like idea. And I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but you have this understanding. I, like, for what I do for a living, like, I have biases, and I have like products that I want to use and that I'm like plugging. So I find it fascinating that you have this like product that you're like fully behind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think for me, I'm not everybody who works in wine maybe has this. I think a lot of people do. Not everybody does.
Is it not developmental? Like, do you like do you not like adapt, or like, do you not like have phases that you're just like, this is.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, just to finish my point, because I'm...
Sorry.
Only because I'm worried that if somebody hears that, that might sound really wanky. What I meant, what I wanted to finish to say was not everybody's like this, is, like, I get emotionally attached to, like, people as well. So there are, like, people that I know, like, John Pheasant's Tears is, like... I've been to John's place, I've met his family... I've seen the work, I highly respect this person, and I think I fundamentally want to always support people that I know are doing good things. So it's like, for me, it's beyond just the taste of the wine and what it tastes like. It's also the human part of it that I think is really important, and I think it's very industry. Impactful.
Yeah, it's right? Your industry, and it's like... there's like bones within it. It's not just about what your opinion is about a certain wine.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the wine was completely terrible and undrinkable. I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah,
of course. But I'd also talk to that person and be like, well, what's going on here? You know?
But on the flip side of that, if there is a wine that is just like exceptional and you...
Yeah, back to your question around phases, I definitely have that. So, like, for example, I went to Oregon last year. We're going to do an Oregon episode soon because we've already got the wines lined up.
And when we get to go there?
Well, maybe one day, hopefully. And
this is bullshit.
Yeah. But we've got it, and we've got one of her wines.
Okay.
But we've got the wines from Kelly Fox, and I met her when I was in Oregon last summer. And it was such an inspiring visit. And I connected with her where I was like, wow, what an exquisite human being who not only makes beautiful wines that are precise, delicate, meaningful wines, who really believes in what she does, she's also one of the most exceptional human beings I've ever met.
That's the thing, isn't it?
You have this emotional, like... Totally. And then I came back, and then, like, all my consultancies are like, Kelly Fox.
Where's
and, like, I consult for Ferndale Hotels, and Sarah Williams, who's the group F&B manager, like, started making jokes where she's like, another Kelly Fox wine, eh? Because I was like, yeah, but we, you, like, they're so good.
That's
and I
why,
think,
like, you, if, you, like, as a producer, like, if you, like, don't get me wrong, it's about what you produce, but surely your character and your just like bravado
but you can't plan that like you just have to show up authentically.
That's what's so nice about it, like you can, what is like tangible and what is solid is what you produce. Like you can do, like you can produce these wines, you can have this fucking like technology, whatever, like social media, whatever, but ultimately when it comes to knowing someone and like selling it, it's you. And that's kind of what I kind of like about what you do, is you develop like friendships with people that are selling a product, and although it's a product that is kind of widespread, it isn't, because like anyone can make a wine, but all wines are different, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know enough about it to really comment, but yeah, that's what I think.
No, I mean, I do believe the, to like sort of riff on that, I think that the most authentic people, like they do, if you're they're really being authentic in who they are and what they do, is like that just, it really does, like it permeates all
of it.
It's
like character, isn't it? It's like the character of, it's like fashion. Like you can't get away with not.
I would say it's like style rather than fashion.
Same thing in my opinion. Like you can,
I know, but you could be in fashion, doesn't mean you have style. Because in fashion means you can be popular, but it doesn't necessarily mean you've got style. I feel like style is timeless in some ways. Even though style can change, you can still have style in that period. You know what I mean?
I'm not at the point where I'm like,
me being too,
in fact, wine's in fashion or that's in fashion.
Wine is in fashion.
No, but I'm like, not to say that it's not.
Jamie, what are your overall thoughts on orange wine as a style? Are you open to it? Do you like it? Is it something that you might ask for if you go to a local spot in Surrey?
I mean, I wouldn't want to ask for it in a local spot in Surrey because I would die.
Why?
Hey.
Maybe you should, because then people will start actually listening it, and they should.
I think that's my own insecurities though, isn't it? I'm not that sociable, really. Like, I know I'm doing this podcast, but this is really just me and you for me.
Yeah.
So I'm not the type of person who just can be, hey, got an orange wine? No, we haven't got any.
But like, that's so different. Like, could I get a glass of white wine? Why is it more of a topic?
Because, I don't know, it's a big thing for me. Like, just to say, like, I don't know, it's just not really a thing that I'm like.
So you still feel like it's out of your realm of like comfort, engage with it in like,
well,
drinking establishments?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because it's not like mental, is it? A glass of orange wine, are you wishing?
I don't think it's mental. I want you to be going out in the world asking for a glass of orange wine, if you like it. Okay.
That's good.
So Jamie Taylor is still on the fence around being an orange wine ambassador, but listen, you can't win them all.
No, I am in.
You're in?
Yeah, I am in.
So you're going to start asking at Bill's.
Such a prick.
Pizza Express. I'm just playing.
I mean, she is, but I don't know if you know him, mate.
Final question from me to you is, if one of our friends or one of your friends...
Yeah.
There is an overlap. If somebody who you know asks you, what do you think? I've heard about orange wine. What do you think of it?
What did you say?
Come on, just taste it through.
I would say...
is it worth trying? Like, what would you answer?
I think the thing for me is, it's like, there is this, like, this volume body that you're like, this isn't just drinking a white wine.
There's an intensity and structure there. Yep.
And that you're like, it feels like you're, there's something there, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
It's so wanky.
Yeah, but, yeah. Like, would you, if someone was like, should I try it, what would you say?
I'd say, ask him. No, I'd say, yes, absolutely. You should try orange wine. Because I really like it. Okay. The funny is, I'd rather have, I just think I'd always want to drink a orange rather than a red.
Happy to hear that. So now I'm going to be like, every time you ask me to pick wine for you, I'm going to be like, orange wine, orange wine, orange wine. We've tried a nice selection of orange wine today. And I think, as I've said many, many times, like from some very interesting producers. So if you want to check them out, look out for Ziderich, for Pheasant's Tears, and for La Stoppa. And yeah, we'll obviously tag that in any social media posts. And any questions that you might have about the wine or orange wine, like send them our way via Instagram. Our Instagram is juice.podcast. And I personally would like to thank everybody on our behalf for tuning in today. And you can also find me on my own personal Instagram at vinalupa, V-I-N-A-L-U-P-A. I'm Emily Harmon. And I'm joined again today by
Amy Taylor.
And thanks for tuning in to Juice Podcast, and we'll see you next time.